There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
46% of Americans expect to leave behind financial obligations when they pass away. So it's crucial to make sure your family is financially protected. Policy Genius helps you find the right life insurance coverage by comparing options from America's top insurers with help from licensed, award-winning agents. Secure your financial future with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get free life insurance quotes in just a few clicks. That's policygenius.com.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.
Hey, this is Tyler.
And this is Casey.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
I can't do it.
What's going on, all you woods people? Tyler's doing karate.
Weird woods people.
I'm doing jujitsu over here, which means I like to lay down. And
hey, hold up. What? Is jujitsu, what is it, like a defensive technique or what is it?
Yeah. So two people who do jujitsu just lay down and look at each other through their legs.
Do they? Sounds like Michael and Eric at the Buck Palace.
White Tail Palace.
Listen. Oh, sorry. Jujitsu, which one came first, kung fu or jujitsu?
Probably kung fu, because Brazil wasn't colonized until the 1600s.
Oh, jiu-jitsu's Brazil.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, probably 1700s. No,
they're pretty
1600s.
Good at rodeo, too.
Yeah, man. They're good at meets. Eric's here, by the way.
What's up?
Yeah. What's up?
I was just wondering, because is jiu-jitsu the downfall of kung fu? I was watching Kung Fu Panda the other day.
I don't even know if kung fu is even a thing anymore.
Yeah, I know.
I don't even – is kung fu a branch off of karate? Or is it?
I don't know. I would love for somebody to send us a message and enlighten us on this.
Yeah.
For sure.
Also, happy World Series to you Rangers fans.
Oh,
out
let's
there.
Go.
Let's go.
Hey,
dude.
You know, everybody thinks that we're Houston Astros fans because we have a friend that plays on the Astros.
Yeah, we're JP France fans.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, it was fun. This is like one of the coolest series ever. I had so much fun because.
Of course, because you got to razz Greg the whole time.
Right. I rode Greg, and we got to just razz the whole time. And then the last game we were listening to, on the way, and he had none. Like, it wasn't even fun then because they just got spanked so bad.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was like Houston wasn't even there.
Yeah,
it's like Houston, we have a problem the whole time.
Yeah, man, it's like they weren't. It's like they went to the theme park and they weren't tall enough to get on the rides or something.
It's almost like we were the Elons and they were the NASAs.
Yeah, right? For sure. that's him. But it really was a lot of fun, you know, because you get to like kind of make fun of Altuve, but also realize that that dude is like one of the best to ever do it. And,
you know, we talked about, we actually were on the Bear Grease podcast recently with our buddy Clay Newcomb. And we talked about little humans on that podcast.
That's right.
If you haven't listened to it, you need to go listen to it. But it reminded me of Altuve at the time.
Yeah,
we were talking about little humans.
Yeah, it did. It was. I think that's who he's referring to on that. But that's a good time. And if the Astros had made it to the World Series, I'd been rooting for them and just be going crazy.
Oh, me too, for sure.
But, you know, it's all Texas, right?
Yep.
Texas is a big place.
I think the Rangers are about to win it.
Do you really?
They're playing the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, but what does that mean?
Well, Phillies are pretty good. And
yeah.
I assumed if Phillies were going to win that they would probably win it, but
I
don't know now.
This
didn't
logic.
Like the best team win? Isn't that how
I
it
don't
works?
Know.
Isn't it a seven-game series? Graham. Is it a seven-game series?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How many games did it take?
Seven.
So they went to game seven, too?
Mm-hmm.
They beat them in seven games over the course of what, a week and
Dude,
a half?
This is all a ploy to
that
make
means
more money. You can't – if you only get six games, you only get six games worth of advertising.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what they say about Houston, the Astros, right? I think it's what I've heard this said at least. Cheaters get remembered, but legends never die, man.
That's it, man.
They had a good run. Listen, you know?
I think everybody's cheating is what I think. including y'all out there saying them is 160s. We know they 140s. Just stop. Right. We know. But the Diamondbacks, I mean, Randy Johnson, right?
Yeah, he retired. Yeah.
I know.
Mark Grace, dude. That was my cousin.
Y'all know that Randy Johnson is a professional photographer now, right?
Yeah, like that's in his job. NFL, right?
Yeah. Have you seen
to make
his logo?
A custom monologue or monopod for him.
I guarantee you.
8 foot nine.
Have you seen his logo?
I don't.
His
I'm
photography
scared.
Logo scared is a know. Dead bird.
That's, I was wondering if this
is
a
bird upside down. Because, you know, he smoked that bird with the baseball.
Oh, that's one of the best.
It is the coolest.
Dude, you know, man, that was a viral video. And I don't know, maybe people are softer now or something. But, like, I don't feel like anybody was ever like, oh, poor bird. It was more like just like, oh, my gosh, that was awesome, you know?
Yeah.
So
what's wild is he was the one to do it. Like,
yeah,
it's hard to do
107 miles an hour.
And he's the one to do it. That's wild.
I know.
Yeah. Dude,
what are the chances he saw that thing right before he released and was just like, oh, I'm going to adjust that just a couple inches.
Low. I don't know how all that works, man. But it is cool that he did smoke the bird.
Yeah.
Tyler Jones are on par with Randy Johnson with the bird smokage.
You think?
Yeah.
With baseballs?
No, with guns.
Guns.
I've seen you shoot.
Oh, it's a little easier with
You'd
a gun
killing some stuff
than a baseball.
Sure. Yeah.
Thanks, though, man.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I just love shooting a shotgun so much, man. I don't know what it is. You know, it's like Uncle Ted has the mystical flight of the arrow, which is something that exists for me, too, but there's something about the shotgun.
Spritz of the pellets.
Yeah, it's spritical.
Which is different than Eric's mystical spritz from New Mexico.
I don't want to know, dude.
Oh, man. So
is that when he got pink eye?
Has been going around in the element crew. Greg gave it to us like 2.5 weeks ago.
Stomach
and
virus.
My stomach is still not good. By the way, we need to say this now before later.
For sure.
We're going to have a Q&A on this podcast. It's a rough Q&A. Hope we haven't lost you yet. But, you know, if you listen to this often, you know that we like to have a good time. And that's what we're doing. But we're going to get down to some serious business about some whitetail deer rut action. We have a ton of questions. So we're going to split this up into a couple episodes. That way we can make sure we answer these things to the best of our ability. Like we like to say, or I like to say, I don't want to put words in Tyler's mouth. I don't like to consider myself an expert, but I do have a lot of experience, and I do my best to gain more experience by the day in the whitetail world. So, you know, the opinions expressed in this podcast are of our own and are not to represent all whitetail hunters everywhere, but it's what we believe to be the case.
I'm more of an excerpt than an expert.
Yeah.
same word or same letters in there, but.
Yeah. Is know. That a drip under pressure? Isn't that what the
excerpt?
Called? Yeah.
I think it's just a is that a movie quote?
Well, I don't know, but Pop used to always say, you know what expert is? And I was like, the thing is like a drip under pressure.
I don't know.
Which I don't know what that means for sure.
I don't either.
But, you know, times
so you have
are
some of these
then.
Sayings that I do not get.
I do have a movie quote for you.
I feel
you know
like
that
Clay
little,
Newcomb right now.
You know I used to have chickens? I still got some chickens.
How and I used to have them or you used to have them?
I do have them. Used to.
Yes, I did.
You know how they leave you little gifts and it's one of your least favorite things?
Yeah.
But did you know that that whole thing is chicken poop?
Yeah.
But you know that little white speck on top of it? Still chicken poop.
Yep.
That's a movie quote for you.
I don't know it.
Well, it's
is it Waterboy?
No. This is for all them country music fans out there.
Oh, who's you're talking about, yeah.
Who's the king?
Dang, what is that, man? Country.
Pure country.
Pure country, yep,
that's it. Yeah.
I hadn't seen that one
where
either.
The sidewalk ends, the road begins. Oh, Dusty. That's right.
He's the same guy
that loves this, dude.
Same guy that was in Sling Blade, or is that different?
No. By the way.
Because he's the king of California.
If any of y'all know Lucas Black, he was in Sling Blade. He's in Tokyo Drift. He was in Friday Night Lights, of course, my favorite movie he was in. Lucas is a hunter, and I want to do some hunting with Lucas. He's a Christian guy. He's big on bringing masculinity back. So I think we need to hang out with Lucas. If you know Lucas,
Michael needs to hang out with him for sure.
Oh man, dude.
Listen. Hey, no, stop. Stop, Mad Mike. You know I love you.
Mad Mike and Sad Mike. That's who we get around here, man. That's it. That's the only guy we got.
It's always fun when not everybody has the headphones on, because you just crack on the guys without headphones that can't defend themselves.
That's it. Michael can't defend himself anyways. Yeah, I saw this the other day. Anybody below 200 pounds is referred to as victim weight. Did you know that?
I did not know that. Yeah. I thought it was bantam weight.
Maybe. I don't know. You know, it's playing weight. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I wish I'd played over 200 pounds, but I didn't.
I wish I'd have played under 200.
Dang, dude.
Because I'd have been faster.
You'd been a fast dude, wouldn't you?
I was too big in college.
Yeah. That happens. I was too big in college, too, and then I got tiny. But anyways, yeah, bantams are known like bantam roosters, right?
Yeah.
Small.
But victim.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about, victim weight. So I think it's a thing in self-defense where, like, if you're below 200 pounds, you have to approach the world differently in a self-defense scenario than you do above 200 pounds.
Really?
Yep.
Is that going to change in 20 years? It's going to be, like, 215?
Because everybody's getting bigger in the U.S.?
Yeah.
Well, I feel – I don't know. That's a good question.
I also feel like the BMI is important there, too.
Yeah, it could be.
Because if you,
5'3", 300 pounds. You're going to be a victim even though you're so round.
Dude, I literally have heard that song one time, and that was the only thing I remember from that song. That guy, he's talking about a fudge round
or something. That's it, man. That's it. Oh, goodness. But we are going to talk about some whitetail today, actually, right? So there's a big cold front rolling through. It is whitetail hype week, honestly. I've named it that today. And I'm about to go try to capitalize on this. A lot of people around the country are trying to capitalize on this thing. It's a little bit at a weird time because it's not in November yet, but it's that Halloween, which I say different than what a lot of people – how do you say that word?
Me?
Yeah.
Halloween.
Halloween.
That's what Sam said.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah.
Right.
Michael says it too. Like, I wonder if people from the north know what we are talking about when we say Halloween.
It's weird. It's weird because a lot of people from up north say Colorado,
which supposedly is the way you're supposed to say it.
According to Steve or who?
This was on trivia the other day.
Oh, and Spencer, I don't
Spencer
believe.
Looked it up.
I don't know.
And, like, it's like the official Colorado pronunciation is Colorado. For me, it's Colorado.
Dude, you got to – yeah, it's got all A's.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, these guys have noticed that I don't say anything but A's.
Oh, dude.
A-E-I-O-U, it's all an A.
There was a good one. Cilantro was a good one.
Cilantro.
Greg made fun of that one.
Yesterday on the phone, I heard you say Winda.
Winda for sure. Oh yeah, yeah. The OWs are A's for sure.
It's less mouth movement.
Yeah, that's it, man.
You know.
Yeah, which Greg should be a fan of. He doesn't even move his mouth at all. He doesn't talk. So, dude, you think Greg normally doesn't talk? He should have been on the in the truck when the Houston Astros were losing.
Damn,
it's real bad.
He's on fire.
Yeah, but big cold front rolling through town, rolling through the country. And
towns for sure.
That's right. Lots of folks are thinking about whitetail, and we are in that group, and we will get into all of those hardcore rut tactics that y'all like here in just a minute with the Q&A portion of this podcast. But first, there's a cold front rolling in.
Child
as
is.
We have already said, it's important that you're going to recognize that you're going to change not only your tactics, but you're going to change what you're wearing. At least what you're bringing to the woods. And this isn't going to be a big old first light ad because I realize everybody wears all kinds of stuff. But we're going to talk about like the function of some pieces a little bit here, right? It's one of the things that I've probably changed and taken note of the most in the past 5 or 6 years of my hunting, okay? It's just I just dress differently than I used to because a lot of us grew up. Tyler, I'm sure you're in on this. Like, you just went to the deer stand in some clothes, and then you put on your coveralls when you got there.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of the way you hunted. And now things are so technical. I'm so thankful that we live in an age whenever, like, merino wool exists, right? Mm-hmm. Or, like, You can have a poly that goes underneath down that then is covered in like a polymer like loft. Like there's so many cool things that mm-hmm. we just didn't have available to us when I was a kid, mm-hmm. right? So let's talk about that a little bit. I'm going to just throw out – we're just going to drop some poop bombs, okay? I'm just going to throw out one that I notice a lot. It is imperative if it's cold, especially if it's windy, that you do not walk in to where you're going in all your stuff, especially if you're running gun hunting, okay? Because you're going to get to the stand. You're going to get to the tree, I'm sorry, and you're going to have to hang sticks. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to hang a platform. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to maybe bend, break, or saw some limbs, depending mm-hmm. on where you're at and what you're doing. Like, you're going to sweat your booty off if you're dressed up and ready to do that stuff. It hurts. I get it. I mean, I can think of back to South Dakota the other day when we were up there, and I had a long walk ahead of me. The wind was blowing like 35 out of the north, and it was about 35 degrees, which in early October, when you haven't felt that all summer, you've been feeling 100 degrees, like that is Arctic. It hurts mm-hmm. so bad, and you have to make a decision that you're going to hurt for 10 minutes. That way the rest of your hunt can be enjoyable. Because here's what happens. No, I don't care what you're wearing. I don't care how good it is at moving moisture across a barrier, which is like industry terminology, right? It just means like some things wick the sweat off your body to help you not be so cold. It's not going to work at 100% efficiency. So you got to do something to make sure that you don't sweat on your 1 mile walk in and or on your 400 walk in with hanging sticks or whatever it may be. So you got to make a decision. What are you going to wear? And it needs to be less rather than more, because if you go in there with like three layers on top, some long johns on underneath your breeches, and some big wool socks in your boots, you're about to have a bad time, because in about an hour you're going to be freezing to death. A couple things that I do on that. I wear a pair of breeches. I think they're called the Catalyst Foundries. At First Light, they got a zipper from waist to ankle, and you can open them bad boys up and get you as much airflow as any human ever desired in a pair of pants while you're walking. And they actually do kind of a cool thing. Like when you open up a pair of breeches down to the knee, it kind of makes this like bellow effect where air pumps in and out as you walk, and it really cools you off. So I like to wear those a lot on my walks because they are also real thick. So you kind of have the best of both worlds with warm and not warm. Up top, you got to wear as little as possible, because that's where all your heat is in your core, you know, and usually you're trying to conserve that heat. But on a walk like that, you're trying to dissipate heat. So something with a big zip in the front is good. If you have to wear a jacket, do it. If you don't have to, I suggest not. One morning, I think I wore a base layer and a light hoodie, and that was really to kind of keep the wind off my skin. And if you do that, then you're in pretty good shape. But that's one of the things I see people making the mistake of, is wearing too much clothes leaving the truck. Another thing I do, I haven't done yet this year, but I will if I need to, is if you're wearing rubber boots, your feet really don't have any breathability. And so I'll bring an extra pair of socks and put on a fresh pair of dry socks at the base of the tree before I climb up the tree. But you take those stinky socks and you stick them somewhere way down deep in your backpack, because you don't want them out there just gallivanting for the deer to smell. So that's
one. Them getting a little human in their nose.
They don't need a little human in their nose.
Or a lot of human.
Yeah. So that's kind of one of my things that I think about when it comes to like preparing for the cold. What about you?
Well, I'm usually hanging sticks probably like 90-95% of the time that I'm going in. So I like to have a glove to hang the stick with. So I usually will, there's these like kind of lightweight half finger gloves that I have that I wear that are pretty slick and surprisingly keep your fingers pretty warm, even though they're halfway, you know, out or whatever. And then you still have a lot of dexterity because you have an actual finger to work with as opposed to a gloved finger.
You can palm that stick and keep the cold part off your tippies. And you get that cloth in between.
And then there's also, I think it's called the trigger mitt. They gave them to me last year. Mm-hmm. It's a mitt, like a mitten, that covers your entire fingers all in one hole, right? And then you can take it, flip it backwards, and it's got magnets, or you can stuff it either way. And then you have half finger from there to work with. And I really, really like those because you can just go mitts on the way in, fingers stay nice and warm, flip them back, put all your sticks up, and then flip them back over, and you're, you know, immediately warm again while you're setting up things that take a little less dexterity to mm-hmm. work with. And then eventually I pretty much always go to my pockets. But for my jacket, you know, I'm going to be trying some different stuff this year, but I feel like I almost always have a puffy of some sort. Mm-hmm. And the Source jacket is a great jacket. I love it. It's kind of one of those it's a puffy, essentially. It's just a quiet version of it, right?
Yeah, and it's a polymer, right? So it's like it's not like a down puffy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's got the same kind of lofty mm-hmm. Puffy, whatever they call those things on the inside. But I like I don't know. I don't like for cold weather. It's just another layer. You know what I mean? And I like it as another layer, and I'll wear it a lot as another layer, but it would be nice if it had a little more insulation, I think. Mm-hmm. And so, I probably will wear more, in the cold this year. I've got more jackets that I'll be wearing, like outer jackets that are mm-hmm. a lot more insulation. So just thinking about it for me, like I run pretty cold these days. And I'll have, I mean, between like, I don't know, some kind of heavy merino / light sweatshirt, I'll have like one of those, a sweatshirt, a vest, maybe a like medium jacket and a heavy jacket on it. And I use just lots of layers just to kind of regulate. Mm-hmm. That way when I'm walking in and out or being active, I can, you know, get more and more layered up. And I almost always have at least one more layer than I think that I will need.
That's a big point I was going to make. I'm glad you made it. I mean, just have an extra thing in there. You never know whenever one of your things like gets wet or something, mm-hmm. and you need to put a different one on or mm-hmm. something. But I think that's a big deal. Just having one extra layer, usually a top.
And that's where that puffy comes in handy because it's crushes down so small.
Bottom
of
your pack,
it's lightweight.
Forget it's in there all season and just use it when you need it.
Its weight to warmth ratio is really good, you know?
Yeah. I usually like, if you want to talk about numbers of layers, on top, if I get more than four on, I feel really Michelin Man. Like, I've had up to seven. I know you've had at least that.
I probably had
more.
At least 14 like, or so.
And that's it's like a poor boy thing, too, and I get it. But, like, you can't afford the $400 jackets, so you just buy a couple of the $90 things or whatever, you know, and layer them up. But mm-hmm. it gets real tough when you got all those zippers and all those collars, all those hoods. And, like, it just makes it hard to draw your bow, you know, yada, yada. The best thing to do is to be efficient with your layering. I think that I always use a really lightweight base layer, but it probably isn't bad to just go ahead and make that like a medium or heavy if you know you're going to be really cold. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's one of the places that I kind of mess up on layering sometimes. I'm going to kind of address, but like a base, a nice warm thing over that, a puffy over that, and then like a durable windproof jacket. It's kind of like the ideal thing. And then on bottom, I'm running three usually if it's real cold. Have like a long john, a pant, and then a bib that I can put on over that if it's pretty chilly. But a lot of times I'm just running two and on the bottom and three on top until it's like real cold. That's another thing too, is like I kind of like to, and I don't know, there might be some science behind this, but I kind of like to always have something to put on. Mm-hmm. Like I don't show up to the stand and put on all my clothes because it's like a place of depression if you're like, get cold at that point in time. You know what I mean?
See, I hear you on that. I think that if I've been hunting in the same type of weather that I'm in that day, I'm not mm-hmm. afraid to just put everything on. But if it's like all of a sudden it's like you were hunting and it was like high of like 50 mm-hmm. every day and lows in the, you know, around freezing or whatever. And then all of a sudden it's like 17 and windy one morning. That's when that's where I like
cold
to be.
Cold daddy.
Just make sure there's an extra one in there just in case, mm-hmm. you know.
Yep, for sure. Well, I feel like that's pretty good takes.
Yeah, yeah.
On the cold weather.
Yours was good.
Thanks, yours too, man.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, man. Golly, we think alike these days, it seems. Eric?
Eric?
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today. Because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Eric, how about some rut tactics questions? You got some of those over there?
Let's start it.
Ractics.
All right.
All right, first question is, when is a good time to scout without worrying about messing up someone else's hunt on public land? Or is this even something I need to worry about?
Yeah, and this is a guy, we got this as an email. I believe that he is hunting in Texas as well, if that helps anything. Mm. So time is difficult depending on where you're at in the country. But I answered him in an email, pretty lengthy thing, but I figured we could include it on here because I thought it was a good question. And by scouting, he means looking for sign, finding a tree to sit in, et cetera. And so, Tyler, I've answered this once. Why don't you answer it now?
Oh, man. Okay, this is a tough question.
Or do you want me to answer
it? No, just let me answer it, and then okay. We'll see if it matches up with what you sent.
Okay.
Okay, so a good time to scout. I think that there's more – the way I look at it is probably like when is a bad time to scout if you're worried about messing somebody up.
Mm-hmm.
So a bad time to scout to where you might mess someone up is – during the like first or last 2 hours of daylight or so,
mm-hmm.
Maybe even 3 hours, during deer season, when there is an open deer season going on. Outside of that, I can't think of I guess you could consider squirrel hunters or pig hunters or whatever, right? But most people are out there deer hunting. When I think about public land hunting, you know, or big game hunting, at least if you're in the West or something like that, maybe, right? So I guess that's kind of when would be a bad time. And then I would say, outside of that, it's public land. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you don't want to be messed up, then you got to either pay for or somehow have some sort of sweat equity into a piece of private land that you can more than likely mitigate running in with somebody on that private land during a bad time for you. Mm-hmm. So that's just what it is, man. I mean, I can think of times you and I have sat in the woods on public and we got up at 3 a.m. to try to drive a long ways in Texas and go hunt something. And my some dude walks in and is like, I shot a deer in here last night, but I got to get my stand out, you know, or whatever. And you're like, man, I got up so early and I stayed up so late because my kid was sick last night or whatever, you know? And it's like, It's tough, but at the end of the day, like, you and I could have also gone and gotten real boy jobs and probably at least had a deer lease where that didn't happen too much.
That's
or something,
right.
You know?
So. Yep. So, I'm just going to read my response.
Okay.
And see how that lines up with what you said. I feel like it's about on brand. I said, hey, Logan, by the way, y'all don't send us a ton of questions in email, but just really good ones you can see. Okay. But we're going to try to do these Q&As often. So if you have questions, just, you know, send them to us in on social, preferably Instagram for questions, and we'll get to them for sure. And thank y'all for the participation in this kind of stuff. It's a lot of fun. I said, hey, Logan, that's a good question and very considerate of you. You're not obligated to think about other people's hunts, but I'm glad you do, which is kind of what you said about it's public land. You know, mm-hmm. You have the right to do what you want to. If I'm going to scout on public during deer season, it's usually exclusively midday unless I'm scouting my way in somewhere in the afternoon. Between 10 and 2 feels like a good time. So pretty much those
are – kind of like driving a vehicle.
Yeah, it's like you could, and I'm not saying Logan's not smart, but like you could use some common sense and just be like, well, when do deer just really not move around? Mm-hmm. That's a good time to be out there. Now, there are some guys that are going to spend some all day sits in the stand, and that's their prerogative, and they shouldn't. That's awesome that people do that, but it shouldn't make it to where you don't have access to the land because they choose to be in there all day. That's mm-hmm. just kind of my take on it. All right.
All right. Next question is, someone trying to shoot a doe right now. Should they hunt around doe bedding?
Depends on what else you got.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not worried about shooting a buck all year, then probably. I mean, it's a great place to shoot a doe if that's your whole goal mm-hmm. for the year. If you want to shoot a doe early in the season and you still want to shoot a buck in the rut, it'd be good not to shoot a doe probably too close to doe bedding, because if it runs into the doe bedding and then you got to spend the evening trying to track it in there and everything, you could probably mess things up. But at the same time, people will fight me on this, I'm sure. But Clay said it in the podcast today, a mature male of these animal species is just a different animal. And mm-hmm. and people say, oh, the old doe, you know, that's the one. And it's like, man, I still don't think that way. I still think that the buck is just a weird animal and it does weird things. So what I'm saying is, even if you go busting up into doe bedding, it's usually where they're not getting messed around too much. There's a high chance, I guess, that they still end up considering that bedding in the future. Yeah. It just may take a few days.
If the implication here is to, how do I not mess up other hunting opportunities by killing a doe, then I would hunt a good food source over doe bedding for sure in the evening, trying to kill a doe. I mean, it's a great way. Does come out early, and you're probably not going to be too picky trying to kill a doe, so just do that. And if you really want to get some preference in there, hunt a food source that's going to change once the rut gets here. Like, you could hunt standing beans or standing corn, mm-hmm. and that's not going to be here on November 10th, most likely, or whenever you're rut hunting. So maybe that's a thing to do instead.
Mm-hmm.
How do bucks use the wind, and any good strategies to play the wind without getting busted?
Man, we cover this in our personal conversations all the time because mm-hmm. we're constantly learning about this. And it's so subjective that it is hard to put your finger on something. But I think that deer do not walk with winds that are at 90 degrees to them. That's where I'm at right now.
They don't walk at winds that are 90 degrees?
Not often.
Really?
So I think that, I mean, everything depends on the area the deer is in, right? So, like, if he has a pinch point that makes him walk west and there's a east wind, he's going to walk with the wind right in his face. But I think that, like, if a buck is cruising, he's going to try to have that wind, like, off his point of his shoulder or off the point of his hip. So it's like at a 45. You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where the way I think I'm seeing deer use the wind a lot of times right now. Sometimes it would seem that a deer almost would rather have a wind at its tail than at its nose, which is kind of counterintuitive to what you think about for deer hunting. But I can think back to Nebraska. We had some bucks come into a field, a alfalfa field, from a different spot than we expected them to, because we had a southeast wind instead of a straight south wind. And I think that that might have contributed as to why they came from the southeast instead of the straight south. But I don't know. But that's kind of my, like, baseline as to way I think that deer use the wind. In general, don't blow your wind at them. is the easy way to get around that, right? Like you just the just off thing, just off thing that people talk about is really good, and I use it a lot, but it's really sketchy too, and you don't always win that battle. And if you're hunting a really big target buck, there's a real good way to mess him up. You know, you are more likely to lose the just off than you are to win it, I think, especially on a light wind too. Tyler, what do you think?
I'm a little bit different, I think. I think that generally speaking, outside of the rut, you don't see deer, you don't see big mature bucks walking with the wind at their tails. I think that they're either going to walk into the wind or with a wind that is somewhere between 90 degrees and 0 degrees off their head, pretty much. And so I think that when you talk about hunting it, I feel like that when I look for a place, so this is, okay, I guess I should have started with this statement. A deer outside of the rut is going to go where he wants to go to eat. So if he doesn't have a bunch of food sources and he's got one food source that relates to his bedding that he's going to every night, he's probably going to go there despite the wind being at his tail.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going with that, where, like, I think that in the – you could look at this as morning and evening, because I might not explain this very well. But, like, a deer will walk at the wind at his tail in the morning so that he can have the wind in his face in the evening.
I just think that if there's one food source, he's going to go eat that food source no matter what.
Yeah.
I don't know if he even plans it. He just says, that's where I'm going. But I think that what the issue is when you're in the Midwest, you've got, like, a lot of times, I mean, a guy sent a screenshot from, like, Nebraska the other day, and he was like, hey, what do you think about this track right here? The deer, I think, are bedding here, here, and here. And I don't normally spend a lot of time. I'm not able to spend enough time with all these questions, right? But, like, this guy, for whatever reason, I had the time, so I saw the message, and I was like, well, do you know where they're eating? And he's like, well, there's a field right there, and so that's that one, since that one's closest, that's the one I think. And I'm like, there's like five fields in this area, and I'm like, well, they're all within like a half mile. Why do you think that he's going to that closest one necessarily? You know, so I guess what I'm saying is, a lot of the country has these multiple food sources around bedding pockets. And I think that in those areas, a buck will oftentimes go to the one that is advantageous to walk into the wind to, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when he gets out of bed, he's going to walk into the wind to a food source. In my opinion, most of the time, there's a lot of exceptions to these things, but that's the way I see it. If there's one food source, like in South Dakota the other day, a buck's going to walk with the tail pretty much, or the wind right at his tail.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's where he has to go to eat food that is different than the willows that he's bedded in. You know what I mean?
I also think that in that situation, the fact that he was able to walk through pretty open country helps that.
See, yeah.
Yeah, he can see in front of him really well.
For sure. And there's other deer around. Usually, like, that older buck is waiting. He's one of the last ones to come out. So he's waiting until there's other deer that have already gone through the area and, you know, checked everything out a little bit. But I guess the way when I think about hunting a spot, and when I look on the maps at night and I'm like, oh, I got to find a new spot for the morning. If the spot works out perfectly for me with the wind, I don't like it. Mm-hmm. I'm probably not going to hunt a spot that the wind is perfect for me. I'm going to find a spot that, like I said, is either 90 degree to which direction or which trail I think they're on, or better for them. And so I have to either play, like, if it's at a 30 degree off of his nose, then you've really got to make sure what side of the trail you're on, and, you know, throw a lot of milkweed and make sure that it's not like 50 yards down there whipping back around or something. Make sure there's a creek that's sucking it even further, mm-hmm. more off that 30 degree mark, you know? And so, like, I guess I just say, I don't like hunting I think a nameless, that was a 90 degree wind for him. He was walking basically, like, if we were looking straight into the wind, whenever I shot him, he would have been perpendicular to us. It was broad, pretty much would have been a broadside shot if he was walking if we're looking straight into the wind in the direction he was walking, was 90 degrees. So I think about that a lot and how he was cruising and smelling at a big, huge swath of stuff from his side and kind of playing into the edge of that property so he could smell it all, you know.
The wind's a weird deal, man. It's
there's no real guarantees or 100% things.
I will say this. It is, honestly, if you want to look at this kind of like pragmatically, it's way more important where you blow your wind than to think about how the buck uses the wind. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
I think
so.
Would you agree with that
statement? I would too, yeah, for sure. Yeah,
so like you can see deer and make moves on them. But if you're blowing your wind at a really bad place, you might not ever see the deer and know what to do.
Right. Yeah, for sure. That's exactly – it gets a good point, man. Like, definitely consider your wind and where it's going and how to keep it out of deer's noses, right, than more than which direction they're traveling. I mean, you have to think about that some. But, you know, it's more like, can I keep my wind out of this deer's nose if he's working to this food source from this direction?
A couple things that help with that kind of stuff, too, is feeling comfortable at longer distances, and I'm not telling you to shoot farther, but be good at it. You know, like if you can make a 35-yard shot on a whitetail, that's going to help you set up tree that's a better, more advantageous wind tree. And learning how deer react to calling, because a lot of times they just are hard to kill because they don't want to walk near the stuff that you can be in. But if you can call them over there, you can shoot them.
Yeah, for sure. And they're going to play the wind
when they do that, for sure.
Yeah.
Snort, wheeze, or grunt to close the distance on a mature buck?
Ooh.
I probably am a grunt guy most of the time.
It's hard to just start out with a snort, wheeze for me, too. I'm kind of right there with you. I killed a deer in Kansas in 2020. I think it was. I don't know.
It was 2020.
When I grunted at a deer from way off and called him in, and it works.
Yep.
I mean, I have hardly ever had a deer have a negative reaction to a grunt. Unless you go with it, you know, right off the bat.
I mean,
that happens.
It can happen.
But I haven't done it. So, yeah, I think I'm a grunt guy.
Is the pre-rut better than the actual rut?
No.
No way, dude. The rut is the coolest thing in the whole world, dude.
I think that, like, I think about Wisconsin when I think about the pre-rut. Because we've got a lot of friends who hunt the Wisconsin area, and they love the last week of October. And I just think it's just a little different up there than what I've ever hunted. So that maybe that's why some of that sentiment comes up. But there ain't nothing better than them just going wild after does.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years, and not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
How do you balance, how do you balance being in the game versus wasting your time?
Oh,
you should
man.
Refer to Element Podcast 1 through 400.
For sure.
On that, actually 300. Did we just cross over the 300 episode threshold
so, yeah.
the other day? Yeah. We talk a lot about the term knowledgeably aggressive, and I think that the only way you're going to balance that is to experience it. You're going to have to make some choices and have them pay off or have them mess you up and learn where your little special spot is, because that also has a lot of variables because it correlates to everybody's skill sets mm-hmm. and just their general experience in the outdoor world. And you're going to have to pair that with how aggressive you can be and what even aggression looks like.
I mean, think about your job. What is your job? You do it 8 hours. Yeah. You do it 8 hours a day or whatever you do. 5 days a week, and you get pretty good at it if you want to, right? If you want to be pretty good at your job, you can get there. So in the same way that if you have done that for a few years, in the same way that you could be a person who waits tables and you have to deal with somebody who's being a jerk to you, the first time you do that probably hurts your feelings pretty bad. And about time number 15, you start to go, oh, that guy's just a jerk. Or maybe you're thinking, you know, he's just had a bad day or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you learn to handle the situation better. And that's what this is. I mean, the more you deer hunt and the more you put yourself in – this is why feeders are great for guys who want to learn something about deer. This is why a green food plot is a great thing. Go sit those things and learn what deer do. Learn how they interact with each other. Learn how they eat. Learn how they interact with the field. How they interact with crows and squirrels and turkeys and hogs and everything else.
How they act whenever they see or hear something they think is a threat as opposed to another deer. Like
when
that's
they smell your ground scent. Mm-hmm. When they smell you, what do, right? These are the things that you have to learn basically by just being there. I mean, you can watch all the TV you want and it just cannot. We can have 360 cameras and you still can't get the perspective that you get by being there and seeing it with your eyes and knowing how far that deer is when it smells you, how exactly it reacted when it smelled your ground scent and how far it went, you know, because on TV, it looks like the deer just spooked off. Well, it might've gone 15 yards, calmed down, started eating. And then eventually it was like, I'm thinking about that. I don't really like it. I'm going to keep going. Mm-hmm. They do weird things. So I guess it's a long way or elaborate way to say, but I mean, what KC is saying is correct. You have to just be there to learn this stuff, and you're going to have to mess up. You can't be afraid of that failure.
All right. This person said, I'm a new hunter and heard a lot of things about the October lull. Does your strategy change from mid-October to November, having a hard time patterning bucks or figuring out how the wind affects deer movement during this time, and curious on your thoughts and tips?
Well, I think that the lull and November are quite different from each other. I also still have not, and maybe this is a thing that I learned in 4 or 5 or 10 years, but I still don't know if I fully believe in the October lull. It's weird because certainly there's a lull on a lot of our cameras right now.
Mm-hmm. I'm seeing it more this year than I ever have.
But maybe we haven't. Yeah. I feel like that way too. But maybe we don't have our cameras where the deer are, like, you know what I mean? Like, what, maybe we have we put any cameras over and under a white oak tree? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, that's why it seems like a lull, because they're in there in the oaks. Maybe there's something that happens as the days get shorter and the temps get cooler that creates sugars in some sort of plant that nobody even thinks about or talks about on whitetail media. And we don't know it, but they're hammering that stuff right now, and it causes them to stay in the trees because it's a close canopy forb or something. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I don't know. It's just one of those weird things, but I guess I would say that we talked a lot about the wind already. So I guess the question is, would you hunt differently in the rut as opposed to the lull? Or is it, is the lull real, or what's the actual question?
Does your strategy change from mid-October to November?
Oh, so yes, it changes a lot, like I said. And I think that we're talking about rut stuff a lot right now. And
well, you know, this we did some scouting, map scouting for a Texas public land piece that we're thinking about doing a little hunting on. And we had this conversation about how, like, the pinch point is alluring, but we can't – that's not what we can do right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because they're just not moving far.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you could hunt pinch points and maybe see some deer, but it's probably not going to be near as poignant of a point as, like, a November 6th,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're looking for something else. So, yep. Yeah, for sure. Does this person say they're a new hunter?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I wouldn't – I mean, everything in whitetail – or a lot of things in whitetail are not very universally understood. So just know that, like, if anybody speaks in absolutes, just be wary of that, I guess, because there's not, like, even in the wind stuff, there's not a whole lot of absolutes. There may be a few, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So just, I don't know. If somebody's speaking in absolutes, they may be trying to convince you that they're an expert more than they're actually trying to help you kill a deer.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point, man. And I think that as a new hunter, and Eric, you can probably kind of think about this some if you have anything to add to it, because you're not new, but you're newer than maybe Tyler and I are. You have to beware of, like, the guru, right? Because it's just like what you said. There's a lot of guys trying to make a living. I don't blame them, but at the same time, like, if I went out trying to just focus on marsh bedding right now in East Texas, I'd have a real tough go of it.
Oh, I can't.
You know what I mean? I'd be trying to look for a marsh.
Yeah.
And there ain't one around.
Yeah,
it's dry.
Oak Island or something.
That's right,
you know?
Yeah. I mean. And so, like, I think that I'm going to answer this a little bit different direction since you covered that really good. As a new hunter, you should probably change your strategy from the rut to mid-October, but don't avoid the woods in mid-October. You have a lot to learn still, mm-hmm. and you might be in the woods in mid-October and learn that a different way of setting your sticks up that's going to help you kill a deer in November. Like, there's a lot of other stuff outside the deer even, but the deer included too, that, like, you could listen to enough guys talk to where you could think that you should only hunt 5 days in the year because those are the best 5 days, and mm-hmm. you need to get out there and try some stuff. And honestly, like, if you don't have a ton of outside influence on your abilities as a hunter, but you're a smart guy and you're passionate about it, you could figure out some whole new stuff that nobody else is thinking about. It's mm-hmm. like a fresh slate, you know, mm-hmm. or a blank canvas.
Mm-hmm.
You have the opportunity to just paint away.
That's right. Be a painter.
Do you blind grunt or rattle?
Rattle.
I blind grunt sometimes, but it depends on where I'm at. If I'm in open country, it's hard to feel like you're doing any good.
Listen, I rattled a deer in from a long ways off last year in open country, and I had to hit them things together like it was baseball yeah. bats, you know. So, like, grunting.
But if I was hunting where I was at in Texas the other night, I wouldn't be afraid at all, especially if the wind was light, to grunt, you know, just kind of loud grunts, because I think they carry pretty good, and deer are really tuned into that frequency, I feel like.
Little Debbie or Hostess?
Man, to be honest, I don't eat that stuff very much anymore.
I'd probably do Little Debbie, but yeah. I can't remember the last time I ate one either.
I think that the variety is better than Little Debbie. Little Debbie PB&Js are real good.
I don't know if I've ever had one of them.
Man, I used to eat them a bunch.
What is Swiss Cake Roll?
I don't even know.
That's a Little Debbie.
I think it is too.
Yeah.
I used to eat a lot of those.
I think a Ding Dong is the kind of like the...
Hostess
version of that, but
it's like
more a
Twinkie,
of a cupcake.
Twinkies or Hostess, aren't they?
Yeah.
Or is that?
I don't even like Twinkies, dude.
I think I liked them.
I like the pink snowballs or whatever they're called.
Ooh,
those are pretty good.
I'm not sure about those.
I like them, but they're not.
Eric doesn't
Debbie.
Like them. Remember, we bought them for his birthday, and he kindly took them and put them in my backseat for the next 3 weeks.
Come on, guys. Yeah, Little Debbie's just has like a healthier feel.
Well, there's oatmeal cream pies, yeah. Little Debbie, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's a pretty those hard one good. To beat.
Yeah,
that cream. Is not a real thing.
Pecan
sure.
pinwheels, dude. Those are good.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah. Do rub lines or multiple rubs indicate?
Oh, dude, apple turnovers, little Debbie.
I don't know if I had that.
Oh, they're
either.
Good. They make some pumpkin ones too.
Who makes the cosmic brownies?
That's little Debbie.
Hey, are you fixing to get them things? That's a ruck sell.
Yeah, as we evaluate this, is this even a question? Come on.
Yeah, for sure.
Do rub lines or multiple rubs indicate bedding nearby?
It's a great question. We've talked about this a lot. Somebody needs to go back and listen to that podcast from last October.
I'll do it.
So, do rub lines or what indicate bedding?
Multiple rubs.
Okay.
You can, yeah.
I think so. I think that indicates that a deer spends a lot of time there, or a deer spends a lot of time there, or multiple deer have visited the area.
Mm-hmm. It can also, though, it doesn't necessarily mean bedding. It can. You have to look at a lot of different pieces, yeah. But it can also mean this is the place where a buck stalls out before it goes out into a field to mm-hmm. eat at night. So,
or there's a pinch, so like a bunch of deer congregate into one little spot.
Lots of scent in there and stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or I've seen some stuff where it just looks like a 2-year-old just got a hankering one day.
Just one day,
yeah. Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a good indicator, but probably doesn't mean that.
Yeah, I think if they're sitting – I think if you look down in a thicket and there's a lot of rubs, and if you go up in there and you see beds or a bed – and these like kind of lower rubs that are right beside it or whatever. I mean, I think that really, that's where we've been like, okay, this is where a buck beds at a lot, you know, but I wouldn't necessarily count on it to always be a bed unless it's like just to the dirt. You know what I mean? As the bed is.
Is it better to hunt the pre-front or post-front window?
Post, that's a good question. I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah.
I
think that it just depends on what that front is like. But, like, dude, most of the time you're, like, trying to work with some voodoo on the pre-front, which I don't believe in, or on the post-front, you know, hey, it's 30 degrees colder than it was yesterday. The deer are going to be moving. So, just, like, in fact, to me, it just seems like post is the way to go.
Let me ask you a question.
All right, ask me.
Is pre-front – before any wind shift happens, before any cloud cover, anything.
So it depends on – I guess you need to ask a meteorologist on this. But to me, yeah, I think pre-front is the conditions before things change.
Because I like to hunt on the front.
Yes.
I think I like to – I like – so
– That wasn't the question.
I know. But maybe that's what he meant. Pre-rut or pre-front – being that there's no conditions that have changed, I'm probably not spending a whole lot of time on, but I love the day of the front. I killed a deer on a scrape on public land in Illinois that might possibly be my biggest eight point ever.
Maybe.
And yeah, maybe.
Well, it depends. We'll see soon.
And he was on, he was killed on a wind shift day. So I had a south wind going into the day. He beds on a south. And then the wind turns out of the northwest about, I don't know, 1:30 p.m. or something like that. And the temp drops consistently throughout the evening. And that was the first daylight encounter he had at that area. We had a camera there. So he was nighttime before that. And so I think, especially right now when you're listening to this podcast, the day of the front is pretty awesome.
You know, we should have talked about this and how big bucks use the wind, because I thought about it and then we kind of got off on something else. But I love those days. You and I talk about it a lot, wind shift days where they get trapped and they have to move, even though
where the wind isn't great
for
them.
The wind isn't the best. Mm-hmm. If you can find a day when it starts out on a northeast and ends up on a straight west or something like that, you know, that's kind of a weird thing to happen. But you get what I'm saying. That's money.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What size does a scrape need to be for you to consider it a community scrape?
What size on?
It's relative to the area of the country, the number of deer per acre in your area, and probably size of the animals. But
yeah,
this makes me think about Illinois last year where we had a bunch of little scrapes popping up, like, you know, paper plate size stuff, and there wasn't nothing. Like, you hunt that thing 5 days and never see a deer. So I don't know.
I mean,
I'm probably going to look at, like, what's going on around there, too.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
The Licking Branch can tell you some stuff, too.
Yeah.
If the Licking Branch is really, like, if it's a little, I don't know.
Human.
A little human. If it's a little branch, it's like half the size of your pinky, broken in half, hanging over or whatever. Man, it's like that might have just been a deal that, you know, got chewed on one time or whatever, and the deer scraped away some leaves. But if the branch looks like something fought with it because it's been hit several times, you
or
know.
Or it's rounded off because it's been there for your lifetime.
Yeah. Or there's like an old breaks on it, right?
Yeah.
Like if it's got old breaks on it and new ones, then you know it's been hit before. It's been a scrape before. It's not just this year. I think the size is not quite as important as like it's the scrape, the Licking Branch and some of the other factors that go on around it, like trails and you know, everything else. But as far as a community scrape, same thing, probably size is not necessarily as big of a factor, but definitely like it needs to look like it's been worked multiple times. It can't just look like something, like you said, that's the size of a laptop computer, you know, that, or a dinner plate, you know, that may have just been kicked leaves from one scrape.
If I see something the size of a doormat, I start
paying attention. That's about right. Yeah. Yep.
But I'll take in consideration something smaller, because I can think about some places that we've hunted where you have a community scrape tree where there's a bunch of Licking branches, a bunch of small scrapes on this one tree, but every deer in the country goes to that thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
I found one, and if you've watched Buck Truck from Arkansas, where I had that two buck encounter and I missed that one low, probably 100 yards or so from those deer was one of those community trees. It had multiple scrapes on it, but one of the scrapes did have a Licking Branch that was really eat up. You know, it was the best scrape on the tree too, but there was multiple scrapes around it. And none of them were like the size of a car hood or anything like people who you hear about, but all that together is just a lot of scent in the
area. Dude, Greg and I set a scrape that he found in Texas last year that was like the size of a living room or something, right? And we didn't see a deer, you know? Yeah. So like it ain't everything.
Favorite climbing sticks?
Ooh.
Man.
Ask me in about a week.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a – maybe we – let's bring that one back. We're not going to get through all these questions, and so we'll have multiple more of these. So, Rut Q&A 2, 3, 4, something like that. In the next couple of weeks, we'll have that answered, I think. We've
got
to try
some new ones to try out. Yeah.
Tips on being still.
Ooh. Good one. Stay warm.
Greg would be a good one to answer this.
Still guy.
He is a still guy.
Moved.
You answering it? Oh, y'all be on your phone.
Oh, do be on your phone or don't? Oh, yeah, I think so too.
You just got to make sure that, like, when you go to look up, you're not just like, you know, like you got to be careful, like, when you look up, because you might get caught.
Yeah, it's a big deal. Don't hunt in a saddle, because you can swing around. You have to have a lot of discipline to stay still in a saddle.
Yeah. Hunting a box blind.
Yeah.
You don't have to be still. I mean, I would say don't get too hyped up on caffeine in the morning. What else?
Be as comfortable as you can, which kind of goes into the whole staying warm. But, like, don't be hurting because you got to squirm. Don't have an itch. You know, like, here's one that helps. If you think you might need to pee, go ahead and pee.
Yeah.
Because the worst thing.
Doe's going to walk in.
Yeah, doe walks in and stays for 20 minutes. Yep. And then you're freaking out.
Yep.
And then you can't make a good shot on the buck that comes in because you got just all the pee-nee going on.
Yeah, I pee a bunch, man. Just as soon as it hits any sort of sign of peeing needing to happen, I do it. But, and I would say probably, you know, don't eat a big old breakfast either, because that's a good way to have to get out of your stand.
Yeah. What else? I mean, the comfortable thing kind of covers a lot, so maybe it would be good to go into that a little deeper. Make sure that you're, if you are saddle hunting, that you're set up the way you need to be as far as like how high your tether is on the tree, how your platform is set, because you don't want to have to readjust that thing and do different stuff like that. Yeah, I don't know.
That's a bunch of stuff. What do you think? Tips.
Be in good shape.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean,
if you're not in good shape, then.
Looked at me when you said that.
No. If you're not in good shape, then you're going to, you know, get sore quicker and other things.
Not going to be mentally strong.
Mm-hmm. Decent footwear.
Yeah.
Michael had to hunt in Crocs the other day. That didn't do me no good.
Well, you got to be tough, you know, what they say.
How far north is the buck truck going?
Oh, wouldn't you like to know?
These specific questions.
Arctic Circle at some point.
Cool, wouldn't it? Yeah, let's go. the Dakotas, pretty much, maybe.
I mean, we've already been there, so I mean, I know that's how far for sure it's going.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. We'll see from there.
We'll see.
When does the rut start?
Oh.
Well, it depends on where you're at. But generally speaking, man, okay, hold on. Is this like a big question?
It is a big question.
Because rut starts.
It could be dates, or we could go into like
biological,
deer, you know, social activity.
Yeah. And I mean, also, is the rut an observed action, or is it a copulative action?
Oh, this is how certain organizations have made their money is playing that game.
Yeah.
It's like, well, actually, the rut is.
Well, let's get make out some money. Nerd. Let's make some money.
So, I mean, Rut Fresh started on like September 6th, right? So,
well, I guess
that.
Yeah, you should send a question to Mark Kenyon.
He thinks it starts on the 6th. But to me, if I go with like, chasing is the start of the rut.
Yeah.
In my mind.
And I would say, I would say, like, it still depends on where you're at, right?
There's hardly anywhere in the continental U.S., I think, that very much chasing happens before, like, October 30th.
Yeah.
Now, it does.
We saw a little bit that year in Iowa you were talking about.
Yeah. And
but that was, it was a snow
on
the 28th, right, or whatever. Mm-hmm. I would say, and I was pretty far north. I don't know if people realize.
Yeah, it's way up there.
It's pretty far.
And two, the bucks are way more in the mood than the does are.
Yeah.
So they're going to start doing stuff before the does are ready to do stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you could just look at it across the board and say November if you want to just give a really fairly correct answer.
Yeah.
There's outliers.
Yep.
And there's rut maps that you can usually probably kind of follow, but I bet you every state the whitetail exists, there's a doe getting bred the first week of November in that state.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, there's a rut map. I think OnX has like a southern heat rut map that if you want to turn that layer on, it shows you kind of like, I guess, based off of biological data when they think the rut is.
Mm-hmm.
So.
That's I think that's all we're going to get to today.
Really?
Oh, man.
Man, just strict.
That's it, dude.
Strict Rick.
Strict Rick.
Stopped it on a hard one. All right, guys. Look forward to episode 2. And it's not episode 2, but the second part of the Rut Q&A. There's a ton of stuff. We'll try to get to as many of them as we can. But, man, these are heavy hitter questions because this is the time of the year that we look forward to so much. Yeah. And I hope you're enjoying it.
Hey, Eric.
What's up?
Are you going to have a video on the Element YouTube channel soon?
I hope. We better review it.
Is it?
Oh.
Has it got you in it?
It does.
Who else?
Chris Webb and Hunter Dickens.
Lead, is it Deer Dying video?
I think so.
Oh, it was going.
So, hey, if you're listening to this week, I think that this comes out. I think we're getting one out. So, be looking on our YouTube channel. Make sure you're subscribed there. And remember, this is your element.
Live in it.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29th, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30th, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1st, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2nd, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4th, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5th, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.